Stardate, June 20th. Arcturus. Stay with us.
Stardate is made possible through funding by the undergraduate students at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. It can be heard every night at midnight and every afternoon at 5:58 on WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate, June 20th. Every night of your life, you'll see the same stars in basically the same places relative to one another. The stars are moving through space, but we can't easily detect this movement because the stars are exceedingly far away. Astronomers who measure a star's movement against the sky background are measuring what's called its proper motion. That's its sideways motion against the night sky. Of the bright stars, Arcturus has one of the largest proper motions. This star has also moved towards Earth since it first became visible 500,000 years ago. In a few thousand years more, it'll start moving away from Earth. In another 500,000 years, we'll no longer be able to see it with the naked eye. Arcturus moves through space at about 90 miles per second. But more important, its large proper motion results from its direction of motion in our galaxy. The Milky Way galaxy is a flat disk of stars. Our sun is located in this disk, and like most other stars, it stays in the disk while moving around the galaxy's center. But Arcturus doesn't move within the disk. Instead, it cuts through the disk, almost perpendicular to it. You can find this star if you remember the phrase, follow the arc to Arcturus. Simply locate the Big Dipper in the northern sky. Draw an imaginary line out from the curve of the Dipper's handle. Follow the arc. The first bright star you come to will be Arcturus. Well, that's Stardate for this 20th day of June. Our show's written by Deborah Bird, and it's produced for the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, Texas. I thank you so much for being with me. This is Joel Block.
Good evening to all of you.
No, good morning.
Good morning, I'm sorry. So some people, it's still evening. I don't know what's wrong with us.
What's wrong with them?
You're Mike Juhas.
And you're Eric Corley.
Right, and we got it right this time.
Wow, that's really something extra special that we've never done before.
And this is the makings of another Radio Free Weekend for you.
It's just started about 10 minutes ago with all sorts of fine music. We're going to have some interesting talk, commentary, and who knows what else.
Who knows what else. We'll be with you till 3 o'clock doing...
You got yourself a job, didn't you?
Well, yes, that's part of the reason why I couldn't accompany you on that interview with the guy from the National Lampoon that we'll be broadcasting later on, because I was out struggling to find employment. I want to say something to the folks who are still looking for something.
Don't.
No, keep it up. Don't stop. Don't let anything get in your way, because it's very depressing. It takes a long, long time sometimes, and it's frustrating as all hell. But
it's frustrating as all get out.
Yeah, yeah. So if you keep it up, it'll eventually pay off.
Sooner or later.
You'll jump off a building first.
So, well, you did get a job, and it seems to be working out fine.
Well, I haven't started yet, but so far it's okay.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I guess, you went for training or something, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I went for training, and...
They told you how to drive there, huh?
Yeah, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. We'll discuss it maybe a little bit later.
Oh, maybe.
Kind of thing.
Who knows?
Go into it more in detail.
It's rather personal, I guess, I suppose.
What do you think of the tune we just heard from Nick Lowe and Rockpile before they broke up?
Great. It was just absolutely fascinating.
Their first and their last album. What do you think of that thing? Yeah. They got together for the album. I mean, they were always together, but then they came together as a group and put out an album, and then they broke up.
The nerve of those people.
Yeah, we heard Heart, a Nick Lowe song, and before that, a tune that Buddy Angelillo. Can I write that thing?
Angelillo.
Okay, I remember things. Buddy Angelillo.
Angelillo.
Calm down.
I heard that.
Who for some reason has preceded us this week instead of following us, which is what he sometimes does.
There's something definitely wrong in that
Someone's,
arrangement.
You know, throwing around things, throwing around people like shuffling cards or something. It's really, I don't know, it makes you think. But he was before us now, which means that...
We're after him.
We're after him. We're after Buddy, and Buddy doesn't have to say his name. Well, why are we doing it anyway?
We're after him for coming before us, so let's just go after him.
That's a good idea. But in any event, the song before that is something that Buddy suggested that we name after ourselves, the Trouble Boys, which is a reputation that we seem to be getting more and more as we do more and more crazy things around here.
That's for sure, like singing Buddy's name for 10 minutes.
Oh, well, I didn't do that. So what kind of things happened to you this week, Mike? Anything,
well, I went in for that interview with John Bendel, which you'll hear in within a half an hour, let's say.
Sounds good.
Maybe more, maybe later, whenever we get a chance. And then what else did I do?
Well, you went into the city. That was one of the hottest, muggiest days I could think of.
I like hot, muggy days.
Were you dressed in like a suit and a tie and everything?
No.
You know, some people really like suffering.
I was wearing a pair of jeans, which was probably heavier than a pair of suit pants.
Yeah, that's true, but at least you weren't wearing a jacket,
and,
I hope.
No, I was wearing just a regular old shirt, just a small shirt, you know, and it wasn't too bad, although I made sure that I... Did I tell you that Tuesday was the first day I'd ever ridden on a New York City bus?
No.
I did tell you that.
I'm still surprised as all...
all get out.
Yeah, how could you go through an entire life and not ride a New York City bus? I mean...
Well, how often am I in New York City?
Even so, you should realize that, hey, this is something that I haven't done.
Well,
it's like not eating, you know?
I was always scared. I mean, can I put in, like, 2 quarters and a dime? Or do I have to put in a token, you know? Or do I put it in now, or do I wait till I get off before I put it in?
Now, where do you wait to... Oh, no, there are places where you wait to
like
get
Philadelphia.
Off.
Like Philadelphia.
Boston.
Yeah.
Boston, I think you have to pay when you get on and pay again when you get off sometimes.
That sounds like the Washington Metro.
The Washington Metro. I told you about that, where I got stuck on it.
Because you didn't have enough money to leave.
I just had enough.
Uh-huh.
But if I didn't, I would have been stuck until the rush hour was over.
Yeah, you would have had to go into Ad Fair,
and I couldn't add fare if I didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
But Boston, I know there are some buses where you pay when you get off and you don't pay when you get on.
Oh, gee.
But you can't tell me that was the reason why you didn't ride a New York City bus.
Oh, I'll tell you the reason why I didn't ride on a New York City bus.
Let's hear it.
I had no reason to ride on a New York City bus.
How could anybody say that? New York City buses are like the backbone of American society.
Yes.
You don't ride a New York City bus, you don't see anything. You don't see, you know, people walking down the streets and, you know, New York City people fighting and that type of thing, and cars and taxis, traffic lights that are broken.
The undercarriage of the...
Traffic people, yes. Meter maids ticketing, and
the
delicatessens, department stores, hotels, Central Parks, that type of thing.
The undercarriage...
You miss it all. New York City, pavement, construction work, the water, the bridges.
The undercarriage of the bus falling out beneath you.
Yes,
I've always missed
that. Well, if there was a Grumman... Well, I guess I can't say that, but if it was one of those buses that's been so controversial lately, I could see why you'd be hesitant to ride it, but... I mean, I've been on New York City buses since I was a kid. I mean, I did grow up in, a part of New York.
Jamaica,
to be exact.
That's why you're into reggae, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, there were 3 types of buses. There were those old camp buses that they used to have in New York City. Remember, they painted them green, and they don't look the same. They're sort of roundish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know those things?
Yeah, the kinds you see in old 50s books and movies.
In fact, when I was a kid, I used to call those boy buses, and the other ones I called girl buses, because they, I don't know, for some reason, the shape of it was...
Sexual perversion on Radio Free Weekend.
Pretty weird. But then there was another bus after that, little green buses. Then they had blue buses, and now they have...
Flexibles.
No, they don't have them anymore. Now they're back to Washington, D.C. buses.
Yes.
Wait, did you ever ride a Washington, D.C. bus?
When I was in Washington? No.
Oh, because you could have claimed that you rode a Washington, D.C. bus, and since that's now a New York City bus, you would have gotten exempt.
No.
I tried to help.
I can't ride a bus in Philadelphia because of the transit strike down there. It's been in so many days.
There's a transit strike in Philadelphia?
Oh, yes, there is.
I knew there's one in Chicago.
Really, right now? The RTA?
I don't know if they settled it, but
I know
there was
I know SEPTA is out on strike. SEPTA, Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority,
and they run the buses and trains in Philadelphia.
Yeah, right.
It seems that we're being hit with a lot of strikes.
Mm-hmm.
A baseball strike.
Oh, I don't want to even talk about that.
You don't like talking about that. I don't care about it that much either. But you got to admit one thing: it seems to be affecting the well-being of a lot of people tremendously, a lot more than I thought it would.
Not me.
Not regular people, but a lot of. You know, a lot of others have become dependent on something
like baseball.
Mm-hmm. Escapist fare.
Some people have gotten dependent on air traffic controllers.
Yeah,
that's for their livelihood.
Look at it this way. If they go on strike, people won't be able to go anywhere, you know,
sure they
without
will.
Taking a bus or a train or something.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you put that little qualifier in there.
If the baseball strike is over... How are the players going to get from one end of the country to the other? You think they're going to ride a bus?
No, train, like they used to.
Yeah, but the thing is, they have, like, one day to get from New York to Los Angeles.
Those bozos.
Well, they didn't plan on this thing.
They're just going to have to land in a dirt strip where it's not controlled by air traffic controllers.
Yeah, that's a pretty nasty thing to do.
It sure is.
So I don't strike.
Hey,
like
speaking
that.
About things coming out of the sky.
What's that?
I have something here from... the June 13th issue of Science News.
Science News?
Which I'd like to read.
Okay, go right ahead.
When Roy S. Clark Jr., isn't he a country singer, Roy Clark?
Roy Clark? Yes, he is, in fact.
But he doesn't spell
branching out.
He doesn't spell his name with an E, though, does he?
R-O-Y-E, no.
No, C-L-A-R-K-E.
Oh, like Arthur C.
Yes, E.
Okay, why'd you, you know...
Well, anyhow, when Roy S. Clark Jr. and colleagues of the Smithsonian Institution suddenly found they could no longer slice their 10.4-kilogram iron meteorite, they decided to have a closer look. X-rays revealed that the researchers saw had come up against the tiny crystals of diamond.
Diamonds?
Mm-hmm.
In a meteor?
Now, listen to this. The diamonds were discovered in a meteorite taken in 1977 from the Allen Hills region of the Antarctic ice cap. The researchers report in an article to be published in Nature magazine. Now, this is the second diamond discovery in an iron meteorite. Diamonds found in the other meteorite, the Canyon Diablo, which formed the mile-wide meteor crater in Arizona about 50,000 years ago, are believed to have resulted from the pressure of impact.
That's not the Grand Canyon, is it?
No. This is the mile-wide meteor crater in Arizona.
Well, the Grand Canyon's a mile wide, isn't it?
Probably more than that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not round, and it doesn't have like a crater shape to it.
Right.
It has like a canyon shape, and it's pretty grand if you ever looked at it.
True.
Have you ever been there?
No.
Either have I.
But I believe you.
I've come close. I've come pretty close to it, though, on a train, in fact.
Really?
I never did tell you about my cross-country Amtrak trip. I've told you about it, but I never told you in depth, but that's not...
You just told me you went on a cross-country
It was lots
Amtrak
of fun.
I don't know if we can say Amtrak on the air. Yeah.
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, okay.
Yes, you can, because there's no other way you can do it by train.
True.
Unless you, like, hoboed, like on a train or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Or the space shuttle or something like that.
Well, continue with your article.
Oh, yes.
I'm leaving us hanging.
These diamonds are believed to have resulted from the pressure of impact when the carbon-containing metallic material hit the Earth. But the smaller Antarctic meteorite probably did not hit with such an impact. So researchers theorize that the diamonds were formed millions of years ago after a collision within the asteroid belt. And it says here that these teeny-weeny diamonds have absolutely no commercial value.
What do you mean? Why can't they have the diamonds? Why don't they have
Yeah, but
value?
They're little slivers, I guess.
Oh.
Just like little shattered diamonds.
Stands to reason, though, that if there are diamonds found in the meteorites, there's probably diamonds all over the place in the solar system and universe, right?
Oh, yeah. I guess
incentive for the capitalist corporations to go out there and send big crews and passenger freights and all that out to the depths of Neptune, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So as long as you hold a string in front of their nose or whatever, hold a string with something attached to it in front of their nose, they'll go after it, and that means that's good for the space program.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good.
Find some diamonds out there.
Diamonds. Are a girl's best friend, aren't they?
And they're forever, too.
Oh, yes.
Diamonds are forever in their universe. Hey.
I guess if you stuck them in some kind of nuclear fission or fusion kind of reaction, you'd probably end up with anti-diamonds.
Anti-diamonds. Star Trek missed that one.
Oh, you know, that reminds me of Neil Diamond, too.
Neil Diamond?
Well, I guess we can live
with that. Could that be an anti-Neil Diamond?
Well, who knows?
You know, you're speaking about nuclear stuff reminded me of something. Now, remember the bombing?
Nuclear?
Whatever.
Or nuclear.
I said nuclear.
A lot of people say nuclear. I was wondering.
Nuclear.
Nuclear.
Isn't that a brand of something? No, we can't talk about that anyway. You said something about the bombing. I mean, no, you said something about nuclear.
Mm-hmm. And you
I said something
about
the bombing of a nuclear plant in Iraq.
Oh, yes.
All right? And that caused quite a bit of controversy. But I found out this week that some crazy person here at the campus of the State University at Stony Brook has sent a telegram to Prime Minister Menachem Begin over in Israel to please come over here and bomb Shoreham and get it out of our way. Someone actually did it.
Was that you?
No, it was not me. I just found out about this. I know who the person is, but I don't want to reveal the name over the air because he'd probably sue me.
A friend of yours?
An
ex-friend, an ex-friend.
Someone I know, an acquaintance. But it was, I think, a very classy thing to do.
Yeah. All right, well, anyhow, we're going to... You have all sorts of things coming your way tonight.
Oh, Mike, I didn't tell you.
What?
Surprise. I found out that there will be a Sidney Schreiber report tonight. The first one since he got out of jail. And this is...
Wait a minute.
Supposedly has a new look to it.
Do you think it's It's going to be good.
I'm not going to say anything about it. We'll cut to him live. He's out there somewhere, and he's got a report. He was working in the other control room before, fixing up a tape and things. So he wants us to, you know, play tapes while he's talking, that type of thing. We'll see how it
play
goes.
Tapes while he's like throw in little
like carts of like fade to actualities and things like that.
Oh, actualities. That's an actual word.
Previous interviews, taped interviews, that type of thing.
I see.
He wouldn't tell me what he was working on, but I understand that he should be going on in about maybe 10 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds very good. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention?
Well, of course, we have a new episode of The Tripod that's coming up at about 1 or so. We have your interview.
My interview with John Bendel and... all sorts of fine things.
If there's something you'd like to discuss, give us a call here at area code 516-246-7901. Very good.
And can I read the weather?
I suppose so, if it's for our area this time.
Yeah, USB Long Island weather is calling for partly cloudy conditions overnight, with a chance of a few showers later tonight. Lows around 16 to 17, mostly cloudy tomorrow with occasional showers and thunderstorms likely into tomorrow night. High tomorrow in the, let's say in the 21 to 26 degree range. Low tomorrow night again in around 18. Variable cloudiness Sunday with a chance of a few thunderstorms. Boom, late in the day.
And
this is for Father's Day. High around 25 to 28.
What's the temperature now in Stony Brook?
Right now, the temperature in Stony Brook is 20 degrees.
All right.
All right. How about some Yoshiaki Matsuo?
How about it? This late bulletin just in. Go ahead, Mike.
Buddy just informs us that it's raining out.
In Stony Brook.
Thank you.
good stuff.
Yeah, without a doubt from Yoshiaki Masuo.
Okay, very popular artist here at the USB.
And in Japan.
And in Japan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mike, it's really pouring outside. I took a look, and
I was out there, too.
You rode your bike here tonight.
Yes, I did.
All the times to ride your bike. What was the weather like when you were over here?
Beautiful. It was absolutely nice and sunny. Not a cloud in the sky. It was kind of hazy. It was kind of, like, humid. But it looked like really nice, absolutely very good bicycle riding.
What happened to you?
What happened to nothing happened to me.
Well, it's going to happen to you when you try to go outside on that bike.
Well, yeah.
Nice, new-looking bike, too. It looks really, you know, like you take care of it. But
oh, you're only saying that.
No, it does. I'm serious.
I've been putting a lot of gadgets on lately. I've got a generator set.
Like in your car?
Yeah.
This is the only person I know who has three different digital clocks in one car.
Yeah, but how many of them work?
That's a good point. But what do you have on the bike?
I think I only have I do have three digital clocks in my car, don't I?
What do you have, a digital odometer on the bike, or...
No, actually I have just the generator set and, all sorts of racks and bungee cords and all that.
You have an oil pressure gauge for the chain?
No, that's a good idea, though.
They're on sale now.
At your local store.
Your local store, right. So we have more things coming up than we mentioned before. We left out some important things.
If you tuned in for the John Bendel interview, that'll be coming up about 15 minutes or so.
About 15 minutes. That sounds fair.
Roughly, who knows.
We will be playing the collage a little later on.
And giving you some clues.
Give you folks, we'll give you some clues along the way at certain points. We won't say when we're going to do it.
But if you
listen to us, you'll hear some clues along certain points. In fact, you'll hear clues all throughout the broadcast day here on USB, so... Don't turn your radio off.
Don't turn your record player off.
Well, leave that on too, just to keep it warmed up. But don't turn your radio.
Did
off.
You ever? Did you ever like? After like you've been in radio for quite a while, right?
Oh,
you've been doing.
I remember way back when.
You've been doing this stuff for quite a while. Have you ever had the occasion to like be falling asleep like you're at home and you fall asleep and you wake up. And you wake up with the radio on, and you hear a song ending. You want to segue the next record as you wake up. Did you ever?
Well, it's happened to me without the radio being on. I've had certain thoughts in my head, and I'm trying to segue the thoughts with other thoughts. I guess it's a step worse than what you have.
That's pretty surrealistic.
It is. When you do something and you get very tired doing it and it stays in your head, pretty soon you want to do everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny.
Oh, wait a minute. Sidney Schreiber's calling us up.
He is.
I think he's about ready for his report.
Okay, so let's
segue into Sidney Schreiber.
He's calling on the hotline. Okay, that has to be him then. He's supposedly out somewhere in the island. He'll give us a live report. Take it away, Sidney.
This is Sidney Schreiber reporting for Radio Free Long Island News. Right now I'm standing on the Sanctico's Parkway overpass looking down at the Long Island Expressway. As you can hear, traffic is moving at a fairly brisk rate right now. However, amazing as it may seem, within a single day, traffic conditions can vary tremendously. Earlier in the day, we were astounded to see that traffic was not moving at all on the LIE. We talked with a few people heading eastbound by Deer Park Avenue. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Yeah, every day about this time.
Are you telling me that this kind of traffic tie-up is a daily occurrence?
Yeah, sure. Doesn't everybody know that?
Let's talk to another driver. Ma'am, what do you think of this traffic?
Who are you?
My name's Sidney Schreiber, and I'm a reporter for Radio Free Long Island.
Woo!
See my microphone?
Yes! What did you want to know?
We just wanted your comments on the traffic conditions.
Oh, well, it's bad, I guess, but not as bad as it is sometimes.
I see. Do you use the LIE often?
Oh, about once or twice a day.
And would you call this a common occurrence?
What?
The traffic. Or are these conditions, do they exist often?
Oh, yes, all the time. But you get used to it.
Thank you, ma'am. Now, let's chat with one more person. Here's somebody in a pickup truck. Excuse me, sir.
What?
You seem a little edgy.
Yeah, well, what do you expect? My air conditioner just broke down. Now my radio doesn't even work.
Are you surprised at the amount of traffic that's on the road?
What, this? Are you kidding? I've seen it 10 times worse than this.
Do you have any theories as to what might cause this congestion?
Theories? Hell, I know what causes it. It's the rush hour. Did you ever hear of that?
The rush hour?
That's right.
Why do you call it that? I don't see anything rushing.
Oh my gosh, did you just fall out of the sky or something?
Now, we talked with quite a few more people over the course of the afternoon, and nearly all of them told me that what I was witnessing was by no means an uncommon occurrence. Several made reference to that mysterious phenomenon known as rush hour. And through an uncanny stroke of good luck, I happened to come across a man who said that not only does this happen every afternoon, but traffic tie-ups occur every morning, except in the other direction, heading westbound.
Yeah, it starts about 6 o'clock in the morning, and it goes on until about 9.
Every day?
Yeah, every day. Well, wait a minute. It doesn't happen on weekends or holidays.
Oh.
No, it's only weekdays. That goes for the afternoon as well.
How very unusual. When this thing occurs, is the traffic just as bad throughout the entire length of the expressway? Or
No, it's funny you should mention that. As one gets further east on the island, say, towards Riverhead, one encounters less traffic. But as you go towards the city, there's always more.
Which city is this?
Oh, you know, the one right over where all those buildings...
Newark?
No, the other one. No, what's it called?
You mean New York?
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Now, we're not going to reveal the identity of the man who gave us all of this information for his own protection. It's quite probable that the people who run the Long Island Expressway would be very upset if they found out this information leaked out. Nevertheless, a journalist's main responsibility is to his audience. And so I contacted the Long Island Expressway management.
Are you aware of the problems that exist on the expressway in the afternoon and the morning?
What are you talking about? The rush hour?
So you are aware of it?
Of course I am. Just crawl out of a rock or something, fella?
Well, don't you think you should do something about it?
Well, what do you want us to do? I mean, we could ride in the road, but of course there's no money for that. And even if there was, it would take forever.
Now, I don't claim to be an expert on roads and highways, but I do know a few things. For instance, the street I live on, a quiet residential lane, has absolutely no problems with traffic. I mean, you can go out there at any hour of the day or night and not experience any delay whatsoever in getting from one part of the street to another. Now, if my street doesn't have any problems, I'd like to know, and I think the people of Long Island have the right to know, why you can't manage to keep the Long Island Expressway clear.
Well, you heard it yourself. There is clearly something here that certain people do not want to talk about. There are undoubtedly a good many scandals and cover-ups involved in this story, but the people have a right to know why traffic mysteriously halts on the Long Island Expressway at two different times in two different directions. And we here at Radio Free Long Island will risk everything to find out why. For Radio Free Long Island, this is Sidney Schreiber. And now back to the studios. Now back to the studios. I'm finished now. Turn off my mic, please.
Oh, click. Sorry. Sorry about that. Sorry about that there, Sidney.
Sorry, Sid. Well, that was interesting.
It sure was.
I never knew about those things. Okay, that's good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, that's part of Radio Free Weekend, I guess.
Sidney Schreiber is an exclusive feature of this program, and the opinions expressed within him are by no means reflective of anything else.
Not even himself.
I hope not.
Not even of his mirror.
Well, Mike, we were talking about this before, and tonight is a very special night for some people. Do you know what it is?
Prom night?
Yes.
I guess we were talking about that before.
Yes, we were talking about that for a split second. I know in the local area it's certainly prom night, and it's
a fairly prominent kind of occurrence.
it can be looked upon that way. Do you have any memories of your old high school days?
Oh yeah,
how that was looked upon.
Oh yeah, I had lots of fun when I was in high school.
Yeah. Oh, I did too. How did you look upon, you know, so a formal occasion?
You know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah. Well. I tolerated graduation, but I just did not want to go through that.
Your prom?
No, I thought it was too silly.
It is a bit ridiculous.
It is. You get dressed up in a $200 outfit, you know.
Yeah, right.
Spend
yeah.
thousands of dollars, that type of thing. You know, I can play other games.
Well, so you came to the radio station.
Exactly. But I recognize lots of people out there have fun at these things, and that's good. That's great. We want you to have fun.
That's all part of life, I suppose.
And if you're in high school now that the band has stopped playing,
And you're listening to us.
Listening to us for some crazy reason.
On your prom.
Hey, give us a call, and maybe we can play something for you people to dance by. And if you want to call us up and have us mention your high school, I guess this is the time to do it, because it's the end of the year. It's all over. I mean, we can say Ward Melville.
We could say Staples High in Westport, Connecticut. We
can say that. Mm-hmm. What's the one in Port Jefferson?
Earl L. Vandermeulen.
Vandermeulen?
Vandermeulen.
Vandermeulen.
I should know. I went to that one.
Right. There was one more, Smithtown East, someone wanted me to mention before.
Oh, really?
If you have any others that you have left over.
Well,
like
we ought to make it fair, we ought to say Smithtown West as well.
Well, no, they didn't ask to be identified.
Okay, so
we won't say that.
Okay.
Don't say Smithtown West.
Okay.
Our number is 246-7901, area code 516, if you're somewhere else.
Yeah, if you happen to be out of our listening area, like in Philadelphia.
Yeah, we got a call from Philadelphia before.
For real?
A real call from Philadelphia. Actually, 20 miles south of Philadelphia. Somebody who was listening to our station this morning. Earlier tonight, we got a call from part of Connecticut, which I never heard a call from.
Right near Fisher's Island.
Fisher's Island.
Yeah.
Strange place, Fisher's Island.
I've never been there.
I never have either. I don't know anybody who has been.
They have a strange area code or something over there.
A strange phone number. Yeah, it's a strange story, which we'll get into someday.
Oh, not tonight, huh?
I think we should save it.
That's a good idea.
So what do you have ready for the folks now?
Organ music. And it's not even E-Power Biggs.
It's not?
No.
Oh, it's too bad.
This is a new record.
Can you dance to this?
I'm sure you can.
Uh-oh.
Whoopsie. Yeah. This is, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll play one of the longer ones, right?
One of the longer ones? Fine.
Yeah. Let me just cue this thing up.
What's it called?
We'll hear a Fantasia in F minor.
K-608.
We asked what the K stood
for. Yes, we did, and nobody ever told us.
Nobody knows.
Does anybody out there know classical music? Tell us what K stands for. It can't be symphony.
No,
it can't be sonata.
Right. Well, anyhow, this
can't
is
be a movement.
This is a Mozart composition.
All right.
And we're going to play this for you, and right after that, who knows what?
The interview.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It's coming.
It's coming soon.
So is the collage, and so is some more clues. So keep listening.
Yeah.
wheeled in the dead sardines.
Oh, that's the new secretary. She doesn't know about gynecologist and a drum.
Yes. Gynecologist and a drum. The industrial strength douche will render you socially acceptable in no time at all.
Hi there, Toots. Say, aren't you a little cutie pie? Want to leave your desk and have a little tumble in the file cabinet?
Ooh! I wish I knew her secret.
She uses gynecologist in a drum, and so should you.
Oh, yes, so run down to your local store and pick up an industrial supply. Well, so we had just heard some things from the new album called Organs of New York, Volume 1, so I guess that means it's more to follow. And this past Tuesday, I went in, me, myself, being Mike Juhas and nobody else, I went into the great big city known as New York to do a little bit of an interview with John Bendel of the National Lampoon. I had some problems getting my machine to run, but we finally got it working.
It's really on now.
It's really on.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Our folks at home can see how red my face is.
Yes.
Take two.
Can you see my shoes? My socks have holes in them. See?
They sure do. Well, with us in the office of John Bendel is one John Bendel from National Lampoon.
This fellow's having technical trouble. Maybe I should interview you.
Okay.
Yes. How long have you been at the station?
I've been there for about 6 months.
6 months?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Do you have that knack for talking on the air?
I try.
That I don't have?
I try, except sometimes I get tongue-tied and I don't know what to say.
Yeah, the dead airspace.
So then we'll just pull out the National Lampoon.
And read it?
Yes.
Read it over the air. Okay.
We've done that.
All right.
With proper credit, of course.
Of course. Why don't you ask a question?
Okay. Now, your name's John Bendel, right?
Right.
And you've been editor of True Facts here at National Lampoon for about a year.
For about a year, yeah.
What did you do before that?
Well, very briefly, I was with an industrial magazine for a couple of months, but before that, I had been a salesman for 5 years, and prior to that, essentially a truck driver.
Oh. Do you have any formal humorous training?
No, I didn't go to driver's school either.
Oh.
Humorous training? Yes, I went to Humor University. Okay.
Could be.
I didn't really.
Uh-huh.
There's no such place.
I see.
John is your name, right?
Mike.
I'm sorry, John. Mike is your name.
Close. You just fell into this because you were new at the magazine, and they threw you here because you wanted to do it.
Yeah, well, I've been interested in the True section, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I find it about one of my most favorite sections because it's everything that you find in the True section is on the level.
So to speak, right. It's right there in our logo.
That's right on your masthead.
Mm-hmm.
And you've put out this brand new book, and it's called The National Lampoon True Facts, edited by yourself,
John Bendel.
And could you tell us what gave you the idea to put a whole book together?
They had thought about it before, but the problem had been in the past that there wasn't, or they thought there wasn't enough material. And they had been looking primarily at the True sections, and the True section has been in the magazine since 77, and it just occurred to me that we should really go back to 72, where it ran as a column, and that would give us enough material for a book.
Oh, so there was a difference between the True section and the True column?
Yeah, in that the True section was different because it added two elements to the old column. First, the visuals, what's your sign?
Mm-hmm.
And the True features, which were items other than the True facts themselves, other than those individual items. For example, excerpts from books, Ellis Wiener's column, the name of which I can't say on the air, I guess, and other things like that, you know, sort of lists, strange lists of things that didn't lend themselves to the old True Facts column that became True Facts features. So now you have a three-page section consisting of True Facts, which is essentially the same as the old column,
mm-hmm.
The What's Your Sign, and a True Feature page, which is kind of a catch-all.
Yes, I like that one especially. I guess in this month's edition you have little
notes from welfare.
What is? See, you say this month. We work about 4 or 5 months ahead. So, what is this month? This month is July.
With the girl in the bathing suit.
The girl in the bathing suit on the cover. Yeah. Okay. That's July, and I don't have it in front of me. Wait a minute. I do have it right over here.
Excuse me.
Yeah. What do we have in July? Oh boy, July. Oh, we have an ad for the True Facts book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your own little scrapbook here?
Yeah, this contains all. Actually, this is one of the things that gave impetus to it. Also, it was a simple enough thing to do. We just went through all the magazines since '77. In August '77, it became the True section as opposed to simply the True Facts column. And I went back through the back issues, clipped them all, put them in a book.
You just ripped them right out.
Tore them right out of the magazine. Yeah. Threw away the rest of the magazine.
What a shame. What a waste.
And put them in this loose leaf binder here. And we saw that, in fact, we might have a book here after all. So we went back, as I said, all the way to 72 to come up with enough material for a book. The best of True Facts really is what it is. And July. Oh, yeah, July.
I bite my crank department.
Yep.
Well, did you write up that little headline there?
Yeah, I did. Those are my own words.
Wow.
Yeah, actually.
I'm very impressed.
Isn't this exciting, folks? And this is our second. We're looking at the What's Your Sign page, the Dead Readers page.
Yes.
And this is the second one that's run. The first one ran about 2 or 3 years ago. Of simply headstones. Headstones. How would you like a headstone that said sleeper?
Mm-hmm.
That's a headstone in a cemetery. Or boring,
mm-hmm.
as it must be under that headstone. Or my favorite really is B-Y-E. Bye.
Bye.
That's a headstone. And since the first page of headstones ran about 2-3 years ago, we've gotten lots and lots of headstone photographs. There's a guy up in Syracuse, New York, who's just a headstone fanatic. I think he must have scoured all the cemeteries from Buffalo to Albany, because he sends in at least 4 or 5 a month.
Wow.
He's got to be represented here. Oh, yes, he's got this headstone. Hey!
Hey!
As it says on a hey. Okay, well, they got our attention in there. And since with this running, I'm sure we're going to get more. I have another envelope. Full of headstones. There's two headstones together, apparently on the on a family plot, and the family's name is Wham. And there's these two headstones, Wham and Wham. Anyway, that'll be running someday soon.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So basically, everything that you get is thrown in from readers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We have some interesting stories come over the AP wire from time to time. I remember one coming over a couple of months ago about a man who was drinking from a bottle of soda and found some insects in it. I guess they're fairly common.
They are so common that I keep a file folder full of them. Stuff and food, I call it.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it'll ever run, because when you put them all together, they're pretty... You know, disgusting. All the things that people find in cans of peas and bottles of soda and anything you can think of, and the settlements that they get.
Oh,
one of those that's similar, but was not something that was found in a can of food, involved a kid in Toronto who decided he was going to defraud, apparently, a Kentucky Fried Chicken or something like that. And what he did was he deep-fried his own pet gerbil, took it to the store and stuck it in the bucket of chicken and tried to claim that that it came out of the kitchen that way. I thought that one was a little extra special.
That's cute.
That's, yeah.
That's cute. We had another story come over lately about a woman who fell through a hole in an outhouse. That was rather unique.
Not unique.
No?
No, it's not unique. Outhouse stories abound. There's one in the book about a guy who tried to commit suicide by jumping down into the depths of his outhouse. But he went in feet first. I mean, he was really trying to kill himself. He should have dived in, but he didn't. He went in feet first, and he just stood down there for about 3 days until they found him.
Oh.
And they hauled him out.
How deep was his pit?
How deep was his pit? I don't know. That was left out of the story, but it's in there.
One of my favorites was the bus plunge department.
Oh, isn't that great?
That was great.
Yeah, the bus plunges, that's the third time, I guess, that the bus plunges have appeared. But this is the whole collection of bus plunges, and they were collected by a designer. I believe he works for the Book of the Month Club now, and his name is Sam Antipit. And he's been clipping bus plunge stories, essentially from the New York Times, for the last 10 or 15 years.
They were great.
Yeah, yeah.
And they all read the same thing.
Just those little headlines, Indonesian bus plunge kills 70, Indian bus plunge kills 42, 50 die in Jakarta bus plunge, and beware of plunging buses. I don't know this for a fact, but I heard that there was a guy at the New York Times responsible for those kind of stories who just thought it was sort of amusing to call them bus plunges, and that he was rebuked by management over there after a while. I haven't seen any bus plunge stories in the New York Times lately. But then I rely on our readers after all.
Well, I guess could say that the drivers are getting better.
You could say that.
And you used to be a truck driver yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Watch out for plunging trucks. Yeah, I was. Bus driver, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did that.
You never plunged
I never plunged a bus.
That's good, I suppose.
No.
You would have ended up in your own column.
See that?
Next time you drive through Indonesia, beware of plunging
buses. There's a related story. Not related, except that it's a bus story. It's the second one that's come out of Mexico in the last 6 months or so. The first one was about, I think this appeared back in January or February, about a Mexican bus company which had experienced a crash in which a number of riders had been killed, and their families were suing for some sort of indemnity. The bus company made an offer. The family said no, it wasn't high enough. So the bus company called all these families together for a conference where they could reach some sort of settlement. But when they got there, they kidnapped them all, took them to a warehouse in Mexico City, and proceeded to beat and torture them so that they would agree to accept the bus company's original offer. They actually killed somebody before the whole thing was over, but the police finally sprung them. Mexican bus companies must be really interesting, because the last story, and this was over the wires, came out of Mexico City, and there were two separate incidents in which drivers of buses had accidentally run into people during their runs, and then had backed over the bodies to make sure they were dead, because presumably the company's policy was that it was easier to deal with claims brought against the bus company by police rather than by surviving victims. So the drivers were ordered, if they hit anybody, make sure they were dead. Well, one of the guys did this to a woman he had run over. The people on the bus were absolutely outraged. When the police got there, they had him by the throat. They were about to kill him. So watch out for buses in Mexico.
That was printed, was it?
Yes, that was printed. Those aren't plunging bus stories. Those are just plain bus stories.
It also had in the July, I guess, issue with the welfare stories, and they were quite amusing.
Yeah, and mildly suspect. Mildly suspect. I ran them anyway because they were amusing and they had the ring of truth to them. And yet, about the time, as a matter of fact, we had just shipped that issue. In other words, it was on its way to the printers when I was watching Real People one night. And damn if they didn't have virtually the same stories, with a few minor exceptions, attributed to a completely different source. Hmm. Another feature that's very much like that ran a couple of years ago. It shows up every year or so. I wouldn't run it anymore because I know it's bogus. But it runs in newspapers and magazines from time to time, and it's about, presumably, what people have put on accident forms as the reason for their accidents. I'm sure you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
You
had one of those a little while back, didn't you?
Oh, sure. We have run it.
In fact, it's in the
book.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where it's... I don't think we have the time to go look for it, but It's the excuses that people have given for automobile accidents.
Here it is.
There it is.
The guy was all over the road. I had to swerve a number of times before I hit him.
Yeah, right. Okay.
The pedestrian had no idea which direction to go, so I ran over him.
Right, right. Those show up. The last time I saw them, it was in a newspaper in Oklahoma somewhere. And a police chief in Oklahoma had given this stuff to the press, claiming that these were on accident forms and that he had seen, and they were the same. It was the same material. It's just makes the rounds, you know, mm-hmm. and it's always attributed to somebody else.
Hmm. That's really quite odd, I suppose. But I suppose anybody will do anything for a chuckle.
Everybody likes publicity.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
What are some of your favorite photos? The readers.
My absolute favorite photo is on the inside cover of True Facts.
That's
the one I have hanging on my wall. Had it been a color photo, it would have been on the cover. But it's of the name of that? It's the Carroll Stream Fire Protection District Volunteers. It's a volunteer fire department in suburban Illinois, and they were the circumstances of the picture. Where that they were conducting a practice exercise. They were deliberately burning a house down, and they were practicing on it. But all you see in the picture is a group of firemen looking like they're taking a coffee break in front of this blazing building. They're all sitting there in a group, smiling at the camera. It's great. Coffee break!
I guess you've seen the signs that say, thou shalt not park here outside of a church.
Yeah, tons of them. I have an envelope full of pages of pictures called the True Parking. And someday I'm going to run a True Parking page. But actually, it's kind of dull when you get them all together.
Mm-hmm.
A popular one is don't even think of parking here.
Yeah.
That's all over the place. The ones that are nice are the ones for stores where they refer, where it's parking for their own customers. So it'll be if the store is named Dodo's Bibliotech or whatever, it'll say Dodo Parking Only. Those can be nice.
Yeah, I remember a few of them, and with sexual innuendos, no less.
Gosh. And there are other collections that I'm putting together. Can I look through my file drawer here?
Sure. He's going over to his file.
No. Oh, okay, here we have... this is easy. True Drugstore.
Oh.
Ah, yes. We have... in this envelope, there's some great drugstores. This is a preview. These have not been
published. Still to come.
These have not been published, but we have Easy Drugs. How about that? We have Super Drugs.
Oh, I remember the one that said lights were burnt out and said sex and drugs.
Yes. We have Stone Drug. We have Deal Drugs. Deal is the name of a town, of course. Daring Drugs. And the Speed Store. That's not a drug store, I guess. It doesn't really belong in the collection. Smack Bar. Terrible stuff. That may run someday when I get enough of them. We have True Car Shopper, some interesting used car lots, such as Hussey Motors, and Dipstick Auto, and Rusty Rentals. They're nice. Marquees, well, you can imagine.
Oh,
Marquees, you know.
I've seen some good ones.
Yeah, usually this is just vandalism, though.
Yeah.
And I really don't like vandalism for its own sake.
Oh, well, can you go through a couple of them anyway?
Well, let's see. I don't know what we have in here. Let's take a look.
I've seen some great ones.
Oh, welcome VFW Cooties Convention. We can't read that one. Fried ice cream. Drop your pants here.
I've had fried ice cream before.
You've had fried ice cream. Okay. Very good. Buy a radar range, cook an Iranian. That was kind of topical. I don't know whether that'll go. Some of these things we can't really say here. 7 days a week, all the females you can eat. $8 per person. Male sold by the dozen.
And it gives a number to call, and it's the same number as our radio station, in fact.
Yes.
Oh.
UP Stone Center. A stoned home is a happy home.
In fact, did you hear that the AMP was going to merge with Stop and Shop?
And what is it going to be called?
Stop and Pee.
Okay. That's your joke.
Yes.
Come bite our buns for lunch. I don't know. You see, these are this is not my favorites because it's so easy. It's so easy for a bunch of kids to, you know, just kind of change the letters around
and then take a picture of it and send it in.
It's deliberate humor, yeah. Which is never as funny as the accidental stuff. So this is deliberate too. Try our LSD. See, you get the idea.
Yeah.
They're, you know, there's tons of them.
No, that's your gay photos.
Yeah, we don't want to do those. They're disgusting.
I bet they are.
pizza. Oh.
Every week
we always order a pizza.
We always order a pizza on the air.
Do you really?
Yes.
You call up the pizzeria
and they deliver.
And they deliver. That's good. Do you eat it on the air, too? I mean, do you...
Sometimes, if we can't avoid it.
We have Peppy Dick's pizza. We have Flying Pizza. Ha Ha Pizza. Here's Elvis Pizza. That's from Montreal, I think. And I'm missing some here, aren't I? I'm getting Licorice Pizzas coming in from the coast before too long. But the pizza's always fun. Great Parks. Oh, here. Oh, we're here there. Oh, there's slides. I have more pizza parlors. Armadillo Pizza, and this is Tombstone Pizza. I like pizza parlors. That'll run someday. Great Parks, not too interesting. True Retail, you don't want to see that, believe me. Great bars. Places like, the Busy Pleasure Club. Wow.
That's cute.
Yeah, Bitchola's Disco. You have to use your imagination. True Park.
They'll run sometime.
The Dead Readers page, of course. There's more Tombstone in there. Doctors. They're great.
I've seen some of those.
Noise photos. These, we have a store named Bangs. Here, there's the
Wham Wham.
Wham Wham. And then we have Bang Bang Oil. Just plain old noises. Anybody has any more noise photographs to send them in here? Wham, bang, crap.
True Religion.
Like that. True Religion. We don't want to do that.
Oh, anymore. Really? Too bad.
Eat Like a Bird. This is... this is one where I decided I would commission a photographer to go out and get photographs. It didn't work out too well, really. But what I decided were that there are all these restaurants in Manhattan named after animals, and it would be fun to run a page of them. And then... I decided, well, why not just go for the birds? So we have the blue parrot, the crow's nest,
the eagle
restaurant, the duck joint, you know, all the store club, of course.
Oh, of course.
And when you got them all together, it wasn't very funny.
So you didn't do it?
No, I didn't do it. It's all bought and paid for, and it'll probably sit here in this envelope for the next 400 years. And... That's about all there is of those.
That's very nice.
Plus tons and tons of miscellaneous pictures. I have just
a big pile of misc.
Big pile of misc in there.
That's good. Okay, well, I suppose we're just about done. But before we say goodbye, do you have anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Buy the True Facts book. It'll be out in July. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay. It's a lot of fun.
It is.
It's a lot of fun. It was fun. It was fun putting it together, and it's fun to read.
You headbangers out there, you know who you are.
Bitches, don't shoot!
Got
Enlightening interview, Mike.
And you weren't even listening.
I was listening. It was a very good one. I have to hand it to you.
Okay.
Here it is.
Hand me about... Whose keys are these?
I don't know. But you might as well take care of them.
Oh, and it has a nice little toe clipper on it,
I particularly like the part where he was talking about the... I didn't like the part about bus plunges, but it's interesting how these newspapers work sometimes. And it's kind of a coincidence, too, because just the other day I was reading my copy of Not the New York Times, which is something that came out a couple of years ago during the newspaper strike.
I had a copy of that, but it got thrown away.
With the regular New York Times.
Yeah.
It looks so much like it. It's amazing. But in that, there were two stories about bus plunges. One was a bus plunging into a pothole in Mexico, and the other one was somewhere else.
I remember there was a thing in there about Long Island's largest atom smasher called the Ronkonkotron.
Oh, really? I must have missed that one.
Yeah, check that out.
They didn't miss a trick. They had all these little stories like they put into Phillips Space in the sports section.
Yes.
And they said that in the 1940s, the New York Yankees were one of the most powerful teams in all baseball. They won so-and-so World Series and pennants. And it said next to that, the opposing teams did not look forward to playing them. That's all it said. And it was really funny the way they did that. And something came out about a year and a half ago, which not too many people noticed, called Not the New York Post.
Really?
And I have that, too.
Ah.
Yeah. And the headline on that one was Son of Sam Still Sleeps. It went into quite detail about how the guy who was arrested for those killings sleeps in jail. How awful that is.
Did the same people put this... Not the New York Post?
No, it was a different style altogether.
Oh.
Not the Post was just... wasn't as good as Not the Times, which I guess sort of follows.
Yeah. I remember there's a little ad in the Not the New York Times for NBC. Freddy's back.
Freddy's back?
And we've got him.
And it showed this guy, you know, the bare back.
Yes, it's Freddie Silverman's back.
They have complete TV listings in both, I think.
In the Post and...
The Post, I know, had them.
Uh-huh.
Things with the old couple and...
The old... Cute.
It's really kind of strange.
Was there any comics in the Not the New York Times?
That's... No, there were no comics in Not the Times. I just remembered there should have been comics in Not the Post, but there weren't any, because they have comics in the Post.
Yeah.
But I guess then that was
there a crossword puzzle in the Not the Times?
I'm not sure about that. It might have been. There was one story in the front page of the Times that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. You know, some these big words kept getting thrown out, you know, one after the other, and it was just totally incomprehensible.
Uh-huh.
And it had a little headline and everything. It was continued on the next page. It's great.
Yeah. Well, that's typical, I suppose.
And on one page, not the Post, it was totally blank, and somebody's handwritten scribble said, "Hold for grocery ad, Bill." And apparently the grocery ad never got to it, so that got printed.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That's very cute.
Very,
of course,
we
don't have advertisements here in non-commercial radio.
No, we don't do that.
Nor should we even mention them.
Oh, well, there are advertisers. We can't, you know, deny the truth.
Well, who really cares? Yeah. Who gives a hoot?
Well, listen, we're running late. It's 20 minutes after 1 o'clock. The Tripods have not made their appearance yet.
Yeah, they'll be here.
All right, we're going to be playing the Collage in this hour.
Sometime.
I guess we'll be playing all sorts of clues up, you know, past then throughout. So maybe what you should do is just, you know,
start looking for clues.
Get out your magnifying glass
and look for clues.
Oh, my. The good old days.
Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents The Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle for peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Today we look in on Howard, who has just arrived in the village of Huntington to look for his wife, Kathy. And as we look in on him, we hear...
I've got fresh avocados, frozen cantaloupes, special today on green bananas, 59 cents a bunch.
Excuse me, mister. I've been looking for my wife. She's about 5'7" with brown hair and turtle green eyes. Did you happen to see her?
Hey, buddy, this is a vegetable stand, not the missing persons bureau. Macintosh apples, 59 cents.
Please help me. I think I'm losing my mind with worry over what might have happened to her.
Would you lose her in a store or something?
It's sort of like that. The only information I have is that she's wandering around somewhere on Long Island.
Ha! She could be anywhere.
Precisely. But over the last few days, I've been everywhere searching for her. And I think I've...
Those are fresh turnips you're handling over there, madam. Oh, and they just came in on the boat this morning.
I'll take two.
That's $2.33.
Here you are.
Thank you, ma'am. Please come again. I've got homegrown coconuts and cherries. Fresh strawberries, 10 cents each, 2 for a quarter. That'll get them over here. What were you saying before?
Well...
What's your name, anywho?
Howard Tripine. I live in East Etowket.
Oh, really? I'm Howard Greenbaum. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you, too.
Yeah, very good. Very pleased to meet you. I grew up right here in Huntington.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, not really, you know. The town's really going to pot, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, too much traffic, too many unfriendly people, and you know what I mean? It's getting so that it's almost impossible to keep this fresh fruit and vegetable stand here right in the middle of the highway.
That's too bad.
I guess we all have to make our sacrifices, though, you know what I mean?
Oh, of course. But listen...
You know, I can really remember when this is just a dirt road.
That's truly astounding. But my wife...
And the entire town went from the beginning of that drugstore over there to just the other side of the same building.
How about that?
And that was it. Believe you me. People were more inclined to buy fresh fruits then and vegetables back then than they are now.
Well, naturally. But I have to... Really,
you know, they were a heck of a lot happier, too. You know, today, with all this technology, everybody's miserable. Who needs it?
Excuse me, are these plums fresh?
What? Of course they're fresh. Can't you read this confounded sign, you cretin? Fresh fruits and vegetables. Fresh! Do you understand? Fresh! Would you like me to spell it out for you? Or has it finally penetrated your thick skull? Oh, can you believe that? He just walked away without saying and nary a word to me. Oh, I tell you, some people, they never used to act like that.
Look, Mr. Greenbaum, can we get back to my wife?
What about her?
Well, I still haven't found her, and I've been roaming all over the island for the past 3 days, searching for her. I've been from Bayshore to Greenport, and yes, I even looked in Terryville.
Oh, Terryville. Oh, boy, you get all over the place. You ought to be a limo driver or something.
Well, the point is, I've
found... Or a taxi driver, that's good.
I've gone everywhere.
Maybe you can drive a train.
Mr. Greenbaum, I've gone everywhere in Long Island, where she could possibly be. Everywhere except here, that is. And if I don't find her here in Huntington, I honestly think I'm going to start losing my mind.
Well, hold on there, Mr. Tripod. You sound a little bit upset.
Me? Upset? Why should I be upset? I've only missed out on the opportunity to star in a major motion picture by getting lost at sea in a canoe and then getting stranded on a desert island with a couple of people from Guatemala who didn't bother to tell me that it was really Cape May, New Jersey, and not a desert island at all, while my wife is busy leaving me because she thinks I've run off with a famous French actress who I was supposed to co-star with in that major motion picture, which she didn't show up for either for some strange reason. Now my wife is missing somewhere on Long Island, my own father doesn't want to talk to me, and the few friends I have here don't believe me because my story sounds so far-fetched. And you think I'm upset?
Yes, I do. Now, I really don't know what in the world you were just talking about, Mr. Tripod, and I don't really think I ought to know either. But, you know, I think I might be able to help you find your wife.
You can? How?
Well, let me ask you a question, Mr. Tripod. First of all, how would you like to help me run this little fruit and vegetable stand for a while?
Why, thanks for the offer, Mr. Greenbaum, but I don't see how that's going to help find my wife.
Just hold on a minute there. Now, you see what a busy street this is, don't you?
There are a lot of people walking around.
Of course. You know, it's been said that eventually, everybody who lives on Long Island walks down this street and passes by this fruit and vegetable stand.
But who says that?
Well, I do, and it's true, too. In fact, sooner or later, everyone in the world must go by here. So it stands to reason that if you work here long enough, You and your wife will run into one another, and you'll be happy for the rest of your lives.
Well,
so how do you like it? You want to join with
that
me?
That does make sense. Well, I think maybe I do stand a shot of seeing Kathy again if I work with you.
Guy!
Well, thank you, Mr. Greenbaum. I think I'll take you up on that offer.
Well, let's shake on it. Good. You're my partner. Let's see you start yelling. Mangoes! Mangoes in season! 39
oranges.
Cents a pound!
Oranges, tangerines, pineapples...
And so, Howard decides to work in a fruit and vegetable store in the middle of Huntington Village to find Kathy. Will he be successful? And how will he do in the trade? Tune in next time when we'll hear Mr. Greenbaum say,
"You're going to go far in this business."
That's next time on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
I'm
thing ever going to end?
I don't know. There it is.
I think it's just ended.
Jeff and Jane Hudson.
The Hudson brothers.
Jane isn't a brother. Jane's a sister. The Hudson people, I guess.
Hudson family.
Hudson family, right. I played this Tuesday night, in fact, the same track, Abaddon.
Oh, you did?
It's interesting, say the least. No, it's a nice tune. And they have one called Guatemala here, too.
You also even played...
Information.
Joel Dolce.
Joel Dolce. How could we forget him?
Arnie played one of those tunes, Girl from Ipanema.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well,
we played that Monday night. And just before my show.
Some really...
Say, you know, let me just go get that phone, because I think I know who it is. And you can just babble on if you'd like.
You think that's how Pete's calling us on the phone?
It has to be.
Well, it could very well be. Well, folks, it's 22 minutes to 2 o'clock on this beautiful Saturday morning. Got 69 degrees F on the outside, and that comes out to 21 on the C.
It is.
It is.
It is. I'm going to get it.
Hallelujah.
You can turn my mic down now that I'm not sitting there.
Oh, okay, I'll do that.
Goodbye.
Your mic is off. Good luck, Mike. Mike's going down to get the pizza, and he's a brave man, I have to say that. Let me continue with this weather forecast. Now, it'll be partly cloudy tonight with a chance of some of those showers continuing, actually. I haven't looked out the window lately, but it was pouring before, and Mike's going to make it back on his bicycle. Will he do it or will he not? We'll find out sometime next week, I guess. Anyway, the low tonight will be around 16 to 17, and it'll be mostly cloudy tomorrow, with occasional showers and thunderstorms likely into tomorrow night. High tomorrow will be in the 70s, and the low tomorrow night... Again, in the around 18 or so. A variable cloudiness Sunday with a chance of a few thunderstorms late in the day. High in the upper 70s to about 28. Chance of rain is 50% tonight, 60% tomorrow and tomorrow night. And, of course, you are listening to Radio Free Weekend, the beginning of yet another Radio Free Weekend. Some things we have coming up for you today, Saturday. First of all, at 11 a.m., we have some music and culture of Pakistan with Tahira, a well-renowned program, at noon. Mr. Hugh and Lowe will be coming in and playing some good reggae music for you until 3:30 in the afternoon, at which time Felix will be coming by with Anda Nueva, which is a whole lot of Latin music for you. Then it's on to Haiti for music and talk with Yvonne Mark on Emission Cousin from 6 to 7. And from 7 to 9, NPR's Jazz Alive will be bringing you some of the finest names in jazz. And then at 9 o'clock, some old and new music, rare recordings, and background info, rather, comprise Jazz on the Air. So you'll want to tune in to that, 9 p.m. to midnight. And on Sunday, we have even more good things for you. We'll get to that a little bit later. Now, as we promised, we will be playing the collage sometime within the next 20 minutes. And just keep on listening to USB for all sorts of clues and things. And, of course, the deadline to send the collage in is this Wednesday, the 24th. It has to be postmarked on the 24th. And if it's postmarked after that, we cannot accept it. But get them in now, wherever you are. You will win something no matter what you have on your postcard or letter or whatever it is that comes up to us. We'll give you the address and everything later on as we play the collage. Now, the person who names the most artists and song titles correctly will be winning themselves 40 albums. That's right, 40. You can count them. And everyone who enters will, as we say, receive a prize. So we have nothing, absolutely nothing to lose by entering this contest. And it's a lot of fun, too. You are tuned to USB FM at 141. I'm Eric Corley without Mike Juhas. He'll be back soon, and we'll be back soon with a lot more things. Stay with us.
している。こんな独裁者に焼き出せるのは悲しい。
Summer vacation.
But wait, there's still one more test.
Yes, it's WUSB's final exam 1981, the fourth rock and roll trivia bake-off and backdoor record giveaway.
Rule six, there is now! Rule six.
The rules are simple. We ask a question.
What is your name? You have 60 seconds.
And if you're the first with the right answer,
how about Betty Jo Bialowski?
You win an album and a chance to stump us with a question of your own for a second album.
Decisions of the judges will be capricious, unfair, and final, unless bribed.
If you don't answer the question, young man, we're going to have to gag you.
What question?
Gag him.
It's WUSB's final exam 1981.
The fourth rock and roll trivia bake-off and backdoor record giveaway.
What?
Just another way we're saying
thanks for listening.
Here at Long Island's non-commercial alternative, WUSB,
Stony Brook.
Okay, and the festivities begin Saturday night. That's a week from tomorrow.
A week from today.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. A week from today at 9 p.m. we'll be giving you all sorts of questions and you'll have the chance to answer them, win yourself a prize, and then if you answer correctly,
you get to answer the question.
Right. You ask us a question. If you stump us, you win another prize.
Right.
And it keeps going all night long, and it's a lot of fun. And, of course, that same day we'll be playing the answers to the collage, which we'll be playing in a few minutes. So it's all sorts of activity coming your way.
The collage is coming up in about 4 minutes, so don't go away. Oh, we also have to do the news, too.
Oh, yes, we have the news coming up in about 9 minutes.
Okay, goodbye.
That'll do. Okay, enough of that. All right, it's time now for the USB 4th Anniversary Collage, as we have promised you for the last couple of hours. Now, let me remind you that there are 63 pieces on this collage. The idea is for you to name as many as you can. And if you successfully do so, and you do it better than anybody else has, then you win yourself 40 albums. And so far, I'd say your chances are still pretty good. What do you say, Mike?
Now, you just mentioned that there's 63 pieces on this little collage.
63.
A couple of them go at the same time.
Well, that may be so.
If you have a stereo, you know what I mean.
Even if you don't, you know what we mean.
But it's better in stereo.
Oh, certainly.
Okay, I'm going to go back to showing my pizza.
Okay, go ahead. Keep your ears pierced, for whatever we shall play for you. Again, if anyone enters and doesn't win the first prize, you'll win other prizes. No question about it. So listen carefully to the collage. It's coming up now.
Logan on Back Porch Bluegrass.
Thank you. And that is the USB 4th Anniversary Collage, and quite a good one it is. Well, the address to send your answers to is WUSB 4th Anniversary Collage, State University of New York at Stony Brook, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. And get them in as quickly as possible. The cutoff date for the postmark is this Wednesday, the 24th. So hurry up and get all your answers together. You will win something. Can't hurt to try. Well, it's 1:55 on this Saturday morning, and time to take a quick look at the news. The Senate is gearing up for a strong anti-busing battle. Senators favoring anti-busing legislation plan to hold strategy sessions this weekend to gauge support for their effort. An amendment sponsored by North Carolina Republican Jesse Helms would prohibit the Justice Department from seeking court-ordered busing for school desegregation. But other senators, led by Bennett Johnston, are pushing for an even tougher measure. The Louisiana Democrat announced Friday that he wants federal courts to be stopped from ordering busing of any student more than 5 miles from the nearest school. A vote on the Helms Amendment is expected Monday.
United States envoy Philip Habib is in Saudi Arabia, where he's expected to meet with Saudi officials Saturday to discuss the Middle East crisis over Syrian missiles
in Lebanon. There's no word on how long he'll stay there, but Israel Radio reported Habib was expected to return to Washington after his talks with Saudi leaders. Officials in Washington deny the report. Secretary of State Haig is still overseas touring the Far East. Saturday, he'll fly from Manila to New Zealand for a meeting of officials from Australia, New Zealand, and the United States. Friday, the secretary conferred with the foreign ministers of Japan, Thailand, and Malaysia, and explained the Reagan administration's decision to sell arms to China. The U.S. trade deficit with Japan could reach $13 billion this year. That's what Commerce Secretary Malcolm Baldrige told a joint economic subcommittee on Congress Friday. Baldrige also said that making a substantial reduction in that deficit is a top priority of his department.
Well, contract talks aimed at avoiding an air traffic controller strike resumed Saturday in Washington. The controllers threatened to strike Monday if there's no settlement. Federal mediator Kenneth Moffitt says he hopes an agreement can be reached this weekend, but Union President Robert Poli is less optimistic. He said Friday he did not think a strike could be avoided. It's estimated that half of the nation's commercial flights would be halted if the controllers walked off the job. Now, lines are forming at Amtrak offices as travelers and bus lines and railroads prepare for a possible strike by air traffic controllers on Monday. A spokesman for Greyhound, Bus Lines, Trailways, Bus System, and Amtrak, the major carrier of rail passengers, all say they plan to put more buses and trains into service, especially in the Northeast Corridor from New York City to Washington and on routes of 500 miles or less. Now, major airlines said Thursday that they would cut air service by more than 60%, and some said they might halt operation completely in the event of a strike. Now, John McLeod, an Amtrak spokesman in Washington, D.C., said the railway plans, quote, to go into our peak holiday contingency plan, unquote. He said, we're going to roll everything we have that's capable of rolling, adding that Amtrak would continue to operate all safe cars that were scheduled to be put in maintenance shops. McLeod said Amtrak planned to put more trains in service, especially in the Northeast Corridor and in the hub routes around Chicago to St. Louis, Detroit, and Milwaukee. Amtrak reported yesterday that its offices were crowded with ticket buyers. The Amtrak office on West 51st Street near 5th Avenue was packed, and the office supervisor, Maureen Albert, attributed half of the business to passengers who feared a strike. She said the computer system was overwhelmed with extra bookings, but Linda Klein, a Greyhound spokesman in Phoenix, Arizona, said the bus company had noticed very little increase in requests for fare and schedule information. She said only 1% of calls coming into a major Greyhound telephone information center in Allentown, Pennsylvania, were from people who said they were concerned about the possibility of a strike. But she attributed the small number of calls to the fact that Greyhound has a no-reservation system. Ms. Klein said, if there is a strike, we stand ready to fill the gap. She said Greyhound could move extra buses at a moment's notice to fill the demands of extra passengers. She added that if the company's fleet of 4,600 buses were not enough, Greyhound would rent more buses. Ms. Klein said Greyhound expected more passengers, especially on trips of less than 500 miles. A Trailways bus system spokesman, Roger Rydell, said there is no limit to the amount of additional passengers that we can handle. He also said the company expected more business, especially in the Northeast Corridor and on trips of under 500 miles. He added that it didn't seem logical that passengers traveling longer distances would resort to buses. Rydell said Trailways had reached a tentative agreement with Braniff to exchange Braniff tickets for bus tickets. Braniff would issue a refund for the difference in price between the air and bus tickets. Rydell also said Trailways had approached all major domestic carriers about the possibility of an exchange of airline tickets for bus tickets in case of a strike. Now, the Greyhound spokeswoman, Ms. Klein, said her company would exchange all airline tickets for bus tickets, but she was not sure how passengers would obtain a refund for the difference in the price of the tickets. Meanwhile, the threat of a strike by air controllers was expected to put added pressure this weekend on air travel facilities that were already taxed by extra travel by students and summer vacationers, but the effects were slow to surface. In some cases, travelers feeling they must be at destinations early next week for business or other reasons were moving up reservations. They are moving up reservations, okay. LaGuardia Airport, serving only domestic flights, was the only one of this city's big jet ports to report heavier than usual traffic prior to the Friday evening rush. Now, LaGuardia handles an average of 50,000 passengers arriving or departing on 865 daily domestic flights. Kennedy Airport, which, like LaGuardia, is within the New York City limits, normally serves 75,000 passengers daily on 610 domestic and 20 overseas flights. Kennedy was not expected to be as affected by the strike because Federal Aviation Administration strike plans do not include curtailing international flights. Newark Airport in New Jersey has a normal volume of 25,000 passengers and 525 domestic and 115 overseas flights. Now, the possible strike losses in the New York metropolitan area, for which PATCO might be sued, could include an estimated $8 million daily in expenditures by businessmen and tourists, in addition to $18 million daily in lost revenues for the airports, airlines, and concessionaires. Port Authority spokesman Edward Franzetti said extra authority police were to be assigned to the airports Monday to cope with congestion in the strike, expected to block the flights of 100,000 travelers in New York and delay 50,000 others. The New York City airports also anticipated that daily volume of 3,500 tons of air cargo valued at $168 million could be affected here by a strike. Mike?
Scientists have confirmed that Mount St. Helens is erupting. It's a non-violent eruption, expected to spend most of its energy in making the volcano's giant lava dome even bigger. Scientists with the U.S. Geological Survey say they couldn't look at the eruption until a cover of thick clouds broke. One of their helicopters was then able to sneak in and get a glimpse of the crater, but they didn't get a good enough look to be able to say how much the lava dome has grown. This is the ninth time the Washington State volcano has erupted since the cataclysmic blast in May 1980, which left 60 people dead or missing. The Reagan administration has assured Israel that it's fully committed to the Jewish state, even though the United Nations strongly condemned the Israeli attack on an Iraqi nuclear reactor. The U.S. joined the 14 other U.N. Security Council members Friday in condemning the June 7th raid and in recommending that Israel compensate Iraq for the destroyed reactor. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee Friday held more hearings on the Israeli attack, which was carried out by American-built warplanes. The State Department has prepared a report for the panel, which refutes comments by Senator Alan Cranston. The California Democrat has asserted that the Iraqi reactor could have produced 3 atomic bombs a year, but the department estimates that the facility could have only produced 1 bomb a year. Eric?
Some news on the visit by Prince Charles last week. New York City Mayor Ed Koch says an attempt by a British official to muzzle him during Prince Charles's visit makes him think the British government is, quote, a little crazy, unquote. The mayor, who has long been a critic of the British role in Northern Ireland, played the perfect host during the prince's whirlwind visit here Wednesday. But in talking to newsmen after a yacht board luncheon with the prince, Koch reiterated that he thought the British position on Northern Ireland was an abomination. He added that he didn't blame the Prince of Wales because it is the government of Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, not the monarchy, which sets Britain's policy. Yesterday, Koch revealed that after his remarks were made, a British official tried to get City Hall to keep the remarks out of the press and off the air. Koch said, "I think they must live in a different world. We have something called freedom of the press here, and we don't seek to suppress them. They're a little crazy, not the British people, the British government." As for Prince Charles, Koch said the prince told him he was very sympathetic to the Catholics in Northern Ireland. It was not the first battle lost by British information officials during the prince's visit. They had requested that the media avoid picturing the prince eating or drinking, but photographs of him sipping champagne on 2 occasions at Lincoln Center got wide distribution. Our outspoken mayor in New York also had harsh language yesterday about the U.S. vote in favor of a United Nations resolution condemning Israel for its raid on a nuclear plant in Iraq, comparing the Israeli action to the late President John F. Kennedy's firm stand on Soviet missiles in Cuba. Koch called the vote the height of hypocrisy.
And in sports, a 37-year-old Westbrook, Connecticut man has launched a fan protest at the Major League Baseball strike, saying both the players and the owners have inconvenienced the public. Sean Driscoll has formed a strike protest group called NAF, which is fans spelled backwards. He says fans feel they have been turned around. He says he has filed papers to make the Westbrook-based organization non-profit. Driscoll, whose favorite team is the Yankees, is hoping the strike will be over by June 30th, the start of the 3-day Yankee-Boston Red Sox series at Fenway.
And if it isn't, he wants a free day of big league baseball at all the parks. Driscoll said that he and his 14-year-old son, Timothy, don't take sides in the dragging baseball strike, which centers on the issue of free agent compensation. He says all they want them to do is negotiate. Eric?
Who's clapping over there? Oh, driving triggers aggression. Did you know that? Two European psychologists claim that when most people climb behind the wheels of their cars, the law of the jungle takes over and they become overly aggressive. Professor Heinz Lukert of Munich, West Germany, says that drivers react to other autos on the highway as if the other cars are intruding into their territory. According to Lukert, when one automobile gets close to another, the driver feels his or her terrain has been invaded. In the meantime, Dr. Malcolm Carruthers in London says that, in his words, when driving, man becomes a much more aggressive animal. The car becomes a weapon, and he uses it instead of a club. Carruthers reports that he has measured the heart rates and bodily changes of motorists and has found that as soon as they climb behind the wheel, quote, the heart rate jumps, blood fat levels increase, and a particular hormone is released. In caveman times, the doctor says, this is what would have happened when a hunter took off in pursuit of his prey.
And scientists in England are trying to design a car that won't kill pedestrians. Britain's Transport and Road Research Laboratory has been conducting field tests on a vehicle equipped with a polyurethane padded bumper and a sloping padded hood that is designed to cushion impacts with human heads. Researchers report that their test vehicle is capable of running into a victim at 25 miles per hour without killing pedestrians. The British magazine New Scientist says the bumper has been designed, in its words, to make the surgeon's task of putting together something that resembles a leg easier. According to the magazine, the car is perfected with the aid of something called a pedestrian killing machine, a device that speeds down a 45-degree ramp into human-shaped dummies. More than 2,000 Britons are said to be killed each year by cars that are traveling 25 miles per hour or slower. Now, with a look at the weather, I believe is Eric.
Thank you. It's good to know they're thinking of us. Well, it's 10 minutes after 2 o'clock, and currently 21 degrees outside. It'll be partly cloudy throughout the rest of the morning, with a chance of some showers continuing later on. Is it still raining outside?
No, it is not.
It stopped raining, so you can ride home on your bike. Good.
Yes.
Low will be around 16 to 17, though. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, with occasional showers and thunderstorms likely into tomorrow night. A high tomorrow will be, I'd say, what'd you say, around 25 or so? Low tomorrow night, again in the mid-teen range, about 18. Variable cloudiness Sunday with a chance of a few thunderstorms late in the day. High in the upper 20s, about 25, 28 or so. Chance of rain, 50% right now, 60% tomorrow and tomorrow night. Here's Mike with some temperatures.
Yes, foreign countries, we'll read you their temperatures. In Ho Chi Minh City, it's 26. Peking, it's 22. Rome, 17. Seoul, 24. Stockholm, 7. Dublin, 11, and partly cloudy. Bonn, it's 11 degrees, and so is it in Brussels. And Eric sure has a squeaky chair. In London, it's 13. Paris, I said maybe not 14. Wausau, 10 degrees and raining. And in Geneva, the coldest one we have is 8. Nope, Stockholm is 7. And let's see, who's the warmest around on here? Let's see, that would have to be New Delhi, 31 degrees. And what is it in Stony Brook? Eric?
Oh, you don't know?
No.
Okay, it's 69 degrees Fahrenheit here.
Well, that doesn't do any good. It's 21 degrees Celsius.
I thought you'd be able to convert that.
I did.
Oh, very good. 21 degrees. Well, that is a complete look at the news. Not a brief look by any means, but a complete look at the news, weather, and sports affecting us right now.
I'm H. Michael Juhas, and you're
Eric Corley. We'll have another look at the news in about 3 minutes. So stay with us. He's Willie Nile.
I like the way you say yes. I like the way you say yes. Sunlight comes in the morning, daylight comes in the day, moonlight comes in the evening, you'll be coming my way. Yes, and I like the way you say. singing. Some like jewels and money, some like the travel of town, some like to think that it's funny, some on the heavyweight crown. Yeah, well, I like the way you say it. You with the soft white fingers, you with the long brown hair, you with the look that lingers, you with the skin so fair. Yeah, well, I like the way you say yes, like to read from scripture, some like to dabble in crime, some like to take their picture, put it on the cover of Time. Yeah, well, I like the way you say it. Yeah. Come with me, my baby, come with me somehow. Come with me, my darling, come with me right now. Come with me in the moonlight, come with me to the glen. Come with me in the darkness, again and again and again. Well, come with your soft white fingers, come with your long brown hair. Well, come with your lips that linger, come with your skin so fair. Well, come with your eyes on fire, come with your wings of night. Well, come with your midnight choir, come in the pale moonlight. Yeah, 'cause I like the way you say yeah.
Sure, the number of your local fire department is prominently displayed. So it's Spunky.
And Spunky reminding you,
don't play with blasting cups.
A public service reminder from Monkey and Spunky
and the
USB.
Yes.
Well, all sorts of good things you can learn from that.
Yeah. You know what I was going to tell you about? Also, okay. Also, when I went down to, could you flip that thing over?
Oh, sure.
Also, Tuesday when I went down to New York, I came back out of New York at around 1:30, and I figured, well, I'm not going to waste the afternoon by going back to work or...
God, no.
Sorry, boss, if you're listening. Or going to sleep. It was a beautiful day. It was a very nice, hot, muggy day, my favorite kind of day. And so I went down to the beach. I went down to Smith Point, and... Mm-hmm. Well, you remember a couple of months ago, there was this whale called Feisty?
Yes.
Well, did you see in the paper the other day, there was a picture of another whale washed up, I believe, on Jones Beach?
Was that a couple of weeks ago?
No, this was just a couple of days
ago. Oh, I don't know about that one.
Yesterday or the day before. Well, I was at Smith Point, and washed up on the beach was a dead turtle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge, huge 300-pound leatherback turtle.
Which,
from what I hear, aren't really indigenous to this area.
What area do they come
from? From the south of here,
hmm.
In more tropical climes. And it's really very sad because this thing must have been a really, really beautiful creature swimming around in its native habitat.
I wonder how it got up here.
Well, there's several theories. I was talking to one of the rangers down there, and mm-hmm. if you happen to have been down to Smith Point on Tuesday. And you smelled a rather foul smell. I thought it was the horses that they keep down there for the rangers, but it turned out to be this rather dead turtle. And it was really a shame because the ranger said he got run over by boats a couple of times at least, and they had this rope wrapped around him that was roped that had been wrapped around him for at least a couple of weeks. And so then this poor thing was just being taken for a ride, it seems.
While he was still alive, you mean?
Yeah. Hmm. Isn't that pretty cruel?
I'll say. There are a lot of crazy people out there who do all sorts of weird
things.
It
just makes me really sick just to think about how cruel people can be.
They say things like, you know, it's only a turtle.
It's only a turtle.
Who are they to say something like that?
Yeah.
You know, turtles are really... I saw something kind of similar. It's a much smaller turtle. It was down by West Meadow Beach, and it was crossing the road, and all these cars were just like, you know, zooming right by it, and the thing was going to get killed any second. And fortunately, I came along, and I saw him, like, all slipped across the street, and I stopped, caused a major traffic jam, but I picked the thing up and brought him to his swamp.
Was it a box turtle?
I believe, yeah, it must have been a box turtle.
We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
they can live to be 123 years old.
No way, it couldn't have been a box turtle. It was one of those little ones. I mean, it wasn't little. That you could take about two hands to hold it.
But yeah.
It wasn't big. It wasn't huge.
Well, it doesn't have to be big to be a box turtle.
Hmm. It just didn't strike me that thing was going to live 125 years.
Hmm.
From the looks of them.
The ranger I was speaking to told me that he thought the turtle that we found, well, that they found that morning, looked like it was about 18 or 20 years old.
Oh, really?
And only about a third of what the size they usually become. They usually get up to about 900 pounds, these leatherback turtles.
That's really something. There are a couple of turtles. We have two mill ponds here in the Three Village area, one in Setauket, one in Stony Brook. And in each, I've seen a couple of really big turtles occasionally surface. And
snapping turtles.
I guess so, because they've been snapping at these fish that mm-hmm. have been swimming around in them.
Little carp?
Yeah, and I wonder how they managed to catch them, because they move so slow. This turtle was trying to finish off what was left of the fish, and he couldn't even move fast enough to catch it as it sunk into the water. So it's a miracle catching it in the first place.
No, it's not really hard at all, actually, because if you ever saw one of these things underwater, they look just like a rock.
Uh-huh.
And they sit really still. And then all of a sudden...
Well, I guess that's part of it, you know, natural coloration. It's really amazing how these things are figured out so that the turtle, who is ordinarily slow, will get food by looking like a rock. Very, very interesting.
Right, right.
And then the poor clown who ties a rope around a turtle.
Yeah. Well, someday I'm sure he'll get what he deserves.
Well, I hope so.
Some location.
They all get it in the end, I suppose, right?
Mm. Well, any other things that have happened this week? Maybe not of such a negative nature.
Yeah. Well, as I was driving down towards Smith Point, I was driving down William Floyd Parkway.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned this to you before. Couldn't believe some of the trees.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Some of the trees there. Absolutely no... The whole wooded area was just woods.
Yeah.
It was no leaves except for some ferns growing. And it was the strangest kind of experience because you know it's summertime and you have to have leaves on trees in summertime.
Yeah.
And it looked like there was a fire that had gone through there and like a couple of weeks ago when the ferns started growing up, except there was nothing that was charred or
right.
anything like that.
Well, in a sense, a fire had gone through in the form of caterpillars.
Yeah, the old bleeding gypsy moths who were in there.
It's really something what they've done to the trees. And anywhere you look, really. Even around here, you see bare trees.
That's right.
In the middle of nowhere.
I wonder what it's like up in Connecticut this time of year. Last week we were talking about this for just a few moments, and we had one of our listeners called up with a suggestion on how you can get rid of your gypsy moths. It's kind of too late for it now, I think.
Well, how was it?
Well, what she suggested you do is you just take some masking tape or something and you wrap it around the outside of your tree with the sticky stuff facing out. See, what they do is they drop to the ground and then they crawl back up the tree. Now, if they crawl, they'll get stuck on the masking tape.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and they won't be able to make it up to your leaves.
That's the basic premise to what we discussed the week before that.
Oh?
With these things you tie around trees. Well, we devoted an entire show to caterpillars, virtually.
Just about.
And they have something on the market that you tie around trees.
Yeah.
And most caterpillars stay in the ground.
Yeah.
I still think they can get up there somehow. They climb your house,
mm-hmm.
and then they climb across the telephone wire.
Right.
And then they're in the leaves.
That's it.
I mean, they're smart. They know what they're doing.
It's a bit
of a
shame.
You look into a caterpillar's eyes, and you see something.
You see sensitivity in his eyes.
For
just
sure.
Just before you squish him and make all this lovely caterpillar juice.
But within two weeks ago, they were all over the place. You couldn't move without running into them, and you heard in the forest the sound of, caterpillars. Now they're not around. They're very big now, and they're starting to slow down and go into the chrysalis stage. It's interesting. It's an interesting part of their cycle.
Yes, it is. It's really a fascinating kind of experience, but why do they have to eat all our leaves?
Yeah, that is kind of... There should be something else that they can...
You know, it has... I was discussing this
with my... garbage. Think of how nice that would be.
I was discussing this with my father today. I was saying how his garden... it's underneath some trees and he doesn't get enough sun. And I said, well, you don't spray the leaves next year and the caterpillars will eat all the leaves and you'll have more sun to your tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. But what about the tomato worms?
Well, you'll have to localize your spray for that, I
guess. I've seen too many of those this year.
No, I wasn't really looking.
Hmm.
The gypsy moths, they tend to stay away from your tomatoes, though.
There was something, speaking of gypsy moths and caterpillars and things, there was something on commercial television last night which I thought was really fascinating. It was on ABC, I think it was 2020. They were speaking about these monarch butterflies that appear in a certain part of the country at a certain time of the year. Now, they appear in huge flocks. It showed the scene, and wherever you could look, there were just butterflies all over the place. You couldn't walk straight, you know. They were just, every inch of the sky, excuse me, was filled with them.
Go ahead. You can cough again.
I'm finished.
Okay.
And, thank you. What the story with them was, they come from Mexico, and they fly up to the United States at a certain point in their life, and they die in the United States.
Migratory butterflies, yeah.
But their children, the caterpillars that form and eventually go into the chrysalis stage and turn into monarch butterflies, they know exactly where to go in Mexico. They go back to the same place their parents came from. Hmm. It's in their genes.
Oh, boy.
The same valley they end up in.
Huh.
They've never seen it before, yet they know where it is.
Huh.
And the thing is that the Mexican government was going to start cutting down trees in that area, and there's a big hullabaloo being raised because of that, because these monarch butterflies are just so unique.
Hmm.
And it would be a shame to cut that
out. It's kind of like the snail darter on the Tellico Dam project.
Uh-huh. Well, no matter how insignificant a thing seems, it's It's a form of life, a unique form of life.
Yes. But now they're finding that the snail daughter isn't so rare after all. And so the dam may well be built.
Is that really the point, though? It's either a creature or if it's just, you know, a living creature of any sort.
Poor things.
Yeah.
Speaking about poor things...
What's that?
You were telling me how you were driving down Nichols Road the other day.
Yeah. Today, in fact.
Oh, it was today when they were doing the paving?
Oh, boy. Well, today was, I think, the absolute utmost in what they've done. They're repaving the road.
Well,
I don't know why they're repaving the road.
There's 100 different roads I can think of that need paving.
For sure.
Than Nichols Road in Stony Brook.
In case you don't know, Nichols Road is a county road. Heads from, I believe, Stony Brook to the Duwauket area all the way down to Blue Point.
Right.
It's a north-south road. And they're
one of the finest north-south roads on Long Island, by the way.
Why do you say that?
Well, because there's no... Well, there's a few traffic lights.
Oh, there's a lot of traffic
up on the northern end. But once you get south of the expressway, there's hardly anything. All you have is Sunrise Highway, and Montauk Highway.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And there's Hurick Street.
There are a lot of traffic lights up in the north part, and they're timed, too, so that you hit every damn one of them. But I don't want to talk about that anyway. Now, they're repaving. I see what they're doing up here. They're putting guardrails in and things like that so you don't go flying over into the other lanes. Good thought there.
Yeah.
But the thing that gets me kind of aggravated is the fact that they repaved the entire stretch of the road. It really didn't need it, except for maybe the shoulder where the bicycle riders are, but it's still no better for them now. They block off traffic for days at a time so that they can do this, and it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just seems to me they could be spending it on something else. It's a little bit more important.
Yeah, like, take a look at Stony Brook Road or Hawkins Road in the Lake Road.
If you're going to spend it on roads, spend it on roads that need it.
Yes.
It's kind of ridiculous, though, to think that there are people in other countries that are starving to death while we're repaving roads that don't even need paving.
That's true.
And it's really insane.
Yeah, you almost got run over in one of those shoulders on your bicycle.
Well, as usual, when they repave roads, they give no consideration at all to bicycles. Okay, so what they did in this case was they repaved the shoulder up to a point.
Uh-huh.
There was a certain point on the shoulder where the pavement suddenly dropped back to the old pavement.
Mm-hmm.
About half an inch or so. Nothing to a car. It could be death to a bicycle.
More than a half an inch.
Maybe more than half an inch. I'm not sure. It almost was to me, though. I was riding down Nichols Road at night, had two lights on my bicycle and an air horn. Didn't do me any good. A car came up behind me, and as I always do when cars come up, not really behind me, like a little bit to the left. It was in the lane. I was in the shoulder. I just moved over a little bit to the right to give him more room in case he should decide to swerve. And before I knew it, I was like flying down this inch or so.
A culvert trench.
Drop. Pretty much a culvert trench, as Sir Isaac Newton would say. I almost flew out into the lane, and I was very upset about that. I still am. And I really would like to get bicycle riders together on these safety conditions, which I find atrocious. Now, I went to that driver safety course.
Before you get into that, I just want to give you my own personal experience on Nichols Road this week.
On a bicycle?
No, on an automobile.
Oh, okay.
I was turning onto Nichols Road from one of the other streets, one of the side streets.
Mm-hmm.
And you figure, everywhere I ever have ever seen road construction being done, the side streets leading onto the street that has the construction being done always have road work ahead signs.
Yeah.
This one didn't.
Oh.
And I got up, and there was a whole bunch of these, like, orange pylons that look so cute. And
cone heads.
Yeah, and everybody steals them for their backyard. And for their picnics and that kind of thing. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of these set up across the lane that I wanted to turn into. Except there was a space for them. And the car in front of me was going the same direction. And there was a couple of people hanging out, like flagmen. They weren't doing anything, though. They were hanging out. And so this car turned in the lane, you know, where he would normally go. And I followed him like a fool. Next thing I know, this huge dump truck loaded with asphalt, or I guess he had just dumped off a whole load of it, big by my standards, was coming straight at me. It was going,
oh boy.
And it wasn't one of these little little love tap kind of things.
No.
It was a real,
what goes through your mind at a time like that?
Holy jiggers, man. So what I did was I just had to drive across the median.
What did the guy in front of you do?
Well,
Well, he was in the other lane, and I had kind of passed him already by that point.
Oh.
By that time, I realized that they were repaving the road. Ooh. I thought it was like an accident or something. I might have been able to go through. So they were rerouting both lanes of traffic on the other lane, one going in each direction. So I had to drive across the median strip, which was like a trench, as Sir Isaac Newton would say.
Yeah. Very interesting. Something happened today, in fact, on Nichols Road. They're, as you say, repaving it. In fact, we had a report earlier in the afternoon not to go near the area during the rush hour because they were doing it in the middle of the rush hour. It was great. The car is going about a mile back on Route 347. That's in the Wisconsin Highway. What they did was, this was a little bit early, about 3 o'clock or so, the flagmen were there at the one of the busiest intersections in all of Suffolk County, Nichols Road and the Wisconsin Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And they were waving people through, you know, the lights. And the light turns yellow, and then it turns red. The guy's just totally, you know, out of it. And he keeps waving people on with a big smile on his face, you know, not even looking at the light that's turned red above him. Meanwhile, cars making left turns, you know, heading east, see the green light for them, and they say, oh, well, I got to go now. It's a green light. And they start going. And meanwhile, these cars keep racing through the red light because
The flagmen
are waving them through. And it's funny because nothing happened, but something really could have. It was a very dangerous situation. And it brings to mind something else that happened a few years ago. Same intersection. They were redoing the lights in this case. They put in these new directional lights and everything, and they were cutting down the old ones. They had all this cable up there for the old lights.
Traffic lights?
Right, and the flagman was supposed to stop the car so that they could knock down the cable. He waved blimply at a car, which didn't see him, and then he turned around. The car went speeding by, and just as the car went speeding by, all this cable came pouring down onto the road, missed the car by a fraction of an inch. The car went on not knowing what had just almost happened to him. And I looked around the intersection, and like everybody in every single car was laughing hysterically. It was really pretty funny just to see that happen so close, and the person didn't even realize what happened. And the look on the flagman's face was pretty funny, too.
Bet you made him think twice about his job.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not.
Because I think he's the same one that did this thing, but I don't know.
Well, Eric, you want to play some more clues?
I suppose we could do that, but
I don't know.
About road paving and everything. I just want to say one thing, though. It being prom night and all for a lot of people, people tend to...
It's a lot of people's prom concern.
Yeah. People tend to go crazy sometimes, which is great, but be careful on those roads, because, as I said before, I took this defensive driving course. I found out that Suffolk County, a couple of years in a row, I believe, has been voted the number one county in the entire country for accidents.
Huh.
Entire country, and this country is ahead of all other countries, so that makes Suffolk County the most dangerous place in the world to drive.
Huh.
And not more than, and more than once, actually. Jericho Turnpike has been named the most dangerous road in the world.
Huh.
They call it one big, long intersection.
That's basically what it is. But, yeah, you know what I think it is?
What's that?
I think it's the part of the drivers having all these bad manners.
Uh-oh.
Get up, 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 get up Bunky, here to tell you about making your house look real stiffy. If you don't already own a home, make sure to get one where the neighborhood's okay. The houses should be in bright, cheery colors like turquoise, hot pink, and fuchsia.
And they should have their Christmas ornaments up year-round with lots of life-size electric figures.
If you already own a house, you can fix it up real easy. Clotheslines in the front yard are a real plus, and be sure to have plenty of lawn ornaments of all different kinds. Elves, jockeys, and pink flamingos.
Don't forget to use lots of plastic flowers and birds. They last longer than the real kind and always stay just where you put them.
Here's a trick formerly known only to professional landscapers. A couple of trucks up on blocks on your front lawn add as much ambiance as a more expensive mobile home or a hard-to-find hobo encampment.
And not everyone can be as lucky, but you can't beat living next to a trailer park.
Now there's a whole other world of decorating waiting for you inside. Get plenty of those fine paintings on black velvet, because they complement all the plastic slip covers you'll want to own.
And don't forget fuzzy toilet seats, smiling face stickers, and Disneyland wall plaques. Those are the little touches that make your house a home.
So this is Spunky.
And Spunky saying, don't forget beer cans and statues with clocks in their tummies.
But don't decorate with blasting caps.
she hails from the south. He tried to believe that each time she would leave with the venom that dripped from her mouth. Like an angel of old, bent on saving the soul, drugged to the knees in the prey to some rude Russian icon, the twine like a python, and blinded the sun.
You got them. I got them too. I got the blues tonight. Yes, I know you don't love me now, baby. I know the reason why. Because you got somebody now, baby. You treat me like a child. You say, see you in a... Oh, yeah, that's all. Don't see him at all. Yes,
nobody now, baby. We're sitting here all alone. I just need you to make up your mind. Yeah, baby, and come on home, or I'll see you in the evening. Oh, yeah, but that's all. I see you in the evening. What will I don't feel all? Yes, I called my woman this morning and called her on the phone. Because somebody told me, look at him, man. She's really not at home. She says, see you in the evening.
The time will be 2:52. Exactly.
Well, 2:52.
We're going to have to adjust our clock here.
At the tone, the time
shut
will
up.
Be 2:52.
And 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
Okay. Well, we sure got rid of her.
Good.
We sure told her.
Who do you think she is coming in this room like this?
I don't know. I really just don't know.
Time ladies are really abrasive these days. They used to be so nice.
Well, wait a minute. We have 2 extra minutes then, since our clock is 2 minutes fast.
Our clock is 2 minutes fast. My watch is right.
Yeah.
My watch is, I don't know what's wrong with this clock here.
How do you set this stupid thing?
You have to go all the way around.
Forget it. You can do it.
Okay. You can't go backwards in that clock for some reason.
You can't stop it and just wait for
it. If it was slow, it wouldn't be a problem. It's fast, so we have to go through all this stuff.
That's life. Maybe if we called, like, the time in Los Angeles, being 3 hours difference, maybe our clock will be closer. No, I guess it won't.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
There are some countries, you know, where the difference in time is an hour and a half.
Yes.
It's very unusual. Like,
it
Iran. When we were making the Iran phone calls a few months ago, we had to deal with the time difference, and they told us it was 8:30 there when it was 3 o'clock here or something, and it was very hard adjusting to that. And I don't know if there are other countries where they, you know, break it down even further. There probably are.
Yeah,
I mean, there's room for everything in this world.
Yeah,
for some countries where there's no time at all, and they don't care either.
Like on the moon.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of our American colonies out there.
Yeah, that's right. There's no time on the moon.
There's a few, I suppose. A few colonies out there.
Oh, there's colonies all over the place.
Yeah, who knows what they brought out on those little lunar modules.
Yeah. They're multiplying now.
They breed like rabbits, I hear. Yes, yes.
Well, Rob Zars is up next.
Yeah, he
brings
you
through the morning hours.
Yeah.
Up until Bill McKenzie's time. And the Radio Free Weekend goes on.
Yeah.
And on.
And on and on and on.
Throughout the entire weekend.
And, well, let's give the folks a rundown. At, in just a few minutes, Rob Zeiser, and then at 7 a.m.
Bill McKenzie.
Bill McKenzie, then at 11 a.m.
Pakistani Music with
Tahira, then at 12.
Reggae.
With Lister Hugh and Lowe. 3:30 brings us
Felix Palacios.
La Onda Nueva.
Some Latin music for you.
And, we have a Mission Cuisine.
And Haitian music.
With Yvonne Mark at 6.
To 7.
And at 7. To 8:58, we have Jazz Alive with the Bill Holman Orchestra.
Comes out at 8:58.
Jazz music fill for 2 minutes.
2 minutes of jazz music for you.
And
the concert billboard at 9 o'clock.
Right.
And every night.
Yes. And at 9:05, Jazz on the Air with... Who's going to do it this week?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm not going to do it.
Somebody's going to do it. You're not going to do it.
That'll be up till midnight. And
Jazz on the Air tomorrow night at 9:05 without Mike Uhas. Tune in.
And it won't be Steve Kreitzer, and it won't be Steve Blyberg, and it won't be Louis Heckheimer.
And who knows who it's going to be?
It might even be Rob Zeiser. Oh, no, he doesn't think so. He should
have
no.
Buddy Angelillo.
Angelillo.
3 hours later, he's still just as crazy.
It sounds just like a great Italian song. Angelillo, Why don't you join me?
Buddy thinks so.
Why don't you join me?
I don't know. Afraid of the consequences.
Yeah, Buddy is a big guy. Watch out. Watch out for him. He's a big man in radio. So, Mike Uhas is who I am.
And Eric Corley is who I am.
And we'll be back this time next week with this insane asylum of lunacy.
And next week we'll be the first people to celebrate USB's 4th anniversary on the air as an FM station. We'll have all sorts of surprises for you then. It's going to be a great event.
Yes.
Please send in your answers to the collage. You
do
have nothing to lose
now.
By doing it.
Yeah.
And do it at least by
Wednesday.
By Wednesday is the cutoff date.
That's
the postmarked by Wednesday, or it's
and
no good.
Yes, you might be too late if you're later than that.
Right
now,
we will win something.
Right now in Stony Brook, it's 21 degrees, and it stopped raining, and I'll be able to ride my bicycle home.
It stopped raining as of 10 minutes ago. It could start up again any second.
That's why I have to get out of here right now.
Yeah, I have to get out of here, too. I have to be up in the morning for a change.
And Rob Zeiser wants to get in here, too. He's peering through the window. You can't see.
Well, let him get in.
He just came in.
3 minutes or so before...
Yeah. How about if I play a song?
You've got some Hound Dog Taylor, I believe.
No, I just played that.
Oh, you just played that. Did I miss Hound Dog Taylor?
You sure did. You coconut chick.
No, what's on the other turntable?
Well, we have the Melodians on the other turntable. Unless you want to hear Hound Dog Taylor, I'll run it through you real quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, man, he's got the style.
He even speeded it up. You can still make out his every word.
I know. It's amazing when people sing that slow.
Yes. Okay, well...
How the chipmunks do it, you know.
Is it?
Yeah. They sing slow, and then when you play it back, you can make out what they say, and they sound like chipmunks at the same time.
You shouldn't have given away their secret.
I gave away their secret about 8 months ago on my show. I exposed them. I played them at the right speed and made them sound totally like morons.
Really?
Singing these songs at the way they really sang them. The music was all off, of course, but the voices sounded very silly.
That's the marvels of technology.
You said it.
Well, Eric, I'll be back Monday night at midnight and then Thursday night at 9. You won't be back until this time next week.
Right. I'm going to be off this week because I've got a lot of stuff to do.
Yes.
But I'll be back next week. Celebrating the anniversary and next Saturday night as well.
Yes. Okay, so you're tuned to Long Island's non-commercial alternative at 90.1. Ooh, that's not there. You want to pull this one out and throw that one in, and yes.
Oh, there it is.
Does that mean we still have another few seconds to talk?
Oh, a few seconds to say goodbye to the folks, and thanks for listening, and keep on listening. Don't turn your radio off.
If you have a phone call to tell us what you like or what you didn't like about the show, as soon as we stop talking, we'll be happy to accept your telephone call at 246-7901.
Area code 516.
And you may have to dial a 1 before that.
Well, maybe a 9 or something like that. But
yes, if you're inside your industrial plant.
Whatever you can do it. You don't have some places you don't dial at all. You push buttons.
That's true. You know,
other places you talk to computers.
The place I work, we have a paging system, and everybody gets on the paging system and says, so-and-so, so-and-so, dial 340, right?
Uh-huh.
The extension. But it's impossible to dial because everybody has a push-button phone. So there would have to be Eric Corley, push 340.
Yeah. They always say dial, no matter what phones turn into. Dial will always be the word.
Okay. Well, we'll leave you with the melodious tunes of the Melodians.
Bye-bye, folks.
Goodbye. I'm sorry.